welcome back to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep minute by minute into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. As always, I'm one of your hosts, Zach.
And I'm John.
And we are once again joined by David from the Lorehounds to round out this week. How you doing, David?
Pretty good. I think we have made it through, and I think we end on a nice shot on this one. So yeah. I have appreciated all the hospitality. The Slim Jims have been delicious, and this has been a lot of fun. It's been fun to geek out on some deep Dune discussion.
Yeah.
It's absolutely. Very rude of Zach to deny coffee service, though.
I don't know if I'll be back, to be honest, John. That's just between you and I.
Okay. Well, you and I can do some Dune talk later on. All right.
Cool. Sorry, I stepped away for a second. What were y'all talking about?
Coffee. We're talking about coffee. Sorry
about it. Don't bother.
All right. Well, we are here. It's Friday. We are talking about minute 44 through 45. I cannot believe we are already almost 45 minutes through this movie. This is crazy. This one feels like it's going a lot faster than the first movie did.
You guys are pros now.
Yeah, right. I did make the mistake of going back and listening to one of our very early episodes. And it's just... Dear listener, if you made it through those, thank you. Those were rough. So this minute starts naturally, it starts right where we left off from the last minute. But it starts right after Paul is waving to the person riding the worm. And I don't think we know it's Stilgar at that moment. We get it in the subtitles here in just a second, but we get it from Paul here in just a second. So he shouts Stilgar, and everything that y'all said yesterday, about how is Stilgar expected to hear Paul. This is where I had that in my notes. So we all three of us have this, the exact same thing. But I guess he does hear him, or at least sees him on the ridge.
Sees him waving?
Yeah, yeah. I guess so. Stilgar shouts back something in Chukopsa. I don't think we get a translation here, do we? We don't get any kind of subtitles.
I don't remember it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I assume it's just, huh? What? What did you say?
I was looking at the script. I do like what the script says. A sand rider slaloms in the desert. The dunes are like waves. The Fremen is truly elegant. A magical sight. It's Stilgar. That's the script notes. Yeah.
I don't think we mentioned it yesterday, but we do get to see some kind of motion from the worm and how it reacts to the mm-hmm. rider. It's very brief, but you can see when he's got the hooks in, he kind of leans one direction or pulls on one of the hooks, and you can start to see the worm rotate. I think I'm gonna save a lot of the like mechanics of sand riding to when we get to that scene with Paul, but this is another point of the movie being internally consistent. Because we get a lot more about the mechanics later, but so the rider leans, he puts pressure on one of the hooks, and the worm rotates its body in that direction, and we see Stilgar kind of go back and forth a couple of times in the last minute. So he's on the worm, he's riding off, and Paul looks behind him to see Chani walking up the dune in real time. She's not teleporting to the top of this dune like she has in the past. She's walking up in real time, and we get to see it. This is a pretty touching scene that we enter into now. Paul has his Ducal Jostin's ring that he got from his dad that Yue left him.
I like the fact that the sandworm writing, especially in a theater environment, right, it would just have been overwhelming to you. So you go from the quiet of Usul, Chani whispering Usul in his ear, to this jet engine sound, to now this still, quiet moment, landscape, natural light. John, you may have more of this from the art and sound of Dune, but how much they used as natural light on the open desert as much as they could. So it really feels gorgeous. But we go from that loudness of the sand, you know, of the sand rider to this quiet moment with him and Chani. And then we hear the Paul and Chani theme music sort of for the first time as well. And so the jarring, the contrast of the Stilgar on the back of the worm to this quiet moment is a great contrast. And really takes you from this, you know, jumping tonalities, you know, in the storyline.
To that point about the quiet, Chani's theme is called A Time of Quiet Between the Storms.
There you go.
We get that moment in Art and Soul. You know, we talked a little bit about it earlier in the week, but Art and Soul, all these shots were done, the exterior shots were done in the UAE, and they were either done right before sunup or right before sundown.
The golden hours.
Yeah.
Yes.
This
the
one
night in the golden hour.
This one was shot right before sunup. It's natural light and it's beautiful. In that quiet moment, Paul says to himself, "Father, I found my way."
Father, the sleeper has awakened.
This is, of course, referencing the graveyard scene from the first movie. So the conversation that Leto and Paul has they have together, where Leto admits that he didn't want the ring either. You know, he found his way to it over time. And so I love these callbacks. I love these continuity tie-ins that they're giving us pretty frequently throughout this week of minutes.
The interesting thing that I found about the ring sequence here too is that there's two things going on. There's the visual where he's slightly silhouetted, so his face is in dark in with the sunlight in the back. So there's an interesting transition element for Paul is at a transition point or an inflection point in his life.
Yeah.
And I'm making this up. Like, I'm just completely interpreting what I'm seeing here with the light and the shadow where he's on that boundary line. But then he has to put away his ducal identity to learn what he needs to learn as a Fremen before he can ride the Sandworm and, form a relationship with Chani. He can't do that as a Duke's son, because if he kept demanding everyone show him ducal fealty and address him in all these ways, ain't going to go so well. So he knowingly puts away, and then later, obviously, he puts the ring back on when he's able to merge his two identities.
Yeah.
But this is the moment where he's like, now is the time for me to be a Fremen and to learn the ways of the Fremen. And I can't do that as a Duke's son.
Paul, at this point, Chani has made her way up to the top of the dune, and his quiet moment, you know, by himself is over. And he just says to her, "It's breathtaking." And she kind of, you know, sits down next to him across the top of the dune. And this is my favorite callback here, because she says, "Look," and points right there, spice. "Arrakis is so beautiful when the sun is low."
Yeah.
And this is the exact shot that we see, the very first shot that we see of Denis Villeneuve's Dune Part 1. Once again.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And normally I would kind of give filmmakers shit for like reusing shots. In fact, that was one of the things that we discovered in our coverage of Part 1, is that there was a shot that was a prescient moment that was then reversed for its real moment later on.
This is where Duncan was sitting on, or the Fremen were sitting in the, like, on the rocks before they met
with Duncan. This is the exact same shot. The difference here, though, is that in Dune Part 1, the line is, "My planet Arrakis is so beautiful when the sun is low." And I think it's fine to have that change, because at this point, you know, Arrakis belongs to, is not Paul's planet, but he is Fedaiken now. He is in with the Fremen, so it's not just Chani's planet either. I don't know. I thought that was an interesting view of how they changed that dialogue, but still used the same shot. And it's a beautiful shot too, because you just have so much like spice in the air, and you can almost hear like what sounds like dropping sand onto like glass.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a really cool sound design that they did for that spice in the air sound.
And it really established the visual language for spice, not only between the two movies, but then also into the television show.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So that we have this, when we see that, we're like, okay, spice, got it, right? You know, the little tinkly things floating in the air, mm-hmm. that yeah. is now firmly established.
And our minute ends there with, you know, her finishing to settle down atop the dune, and Paul is just kind of looking at her with his doe eyes this time around. So
with that golden light sort of illuminating from behind, and mm-hmm, it's just yeah. such a clean, crisp shot. And it's, I don't know. It's kind of nice that they ended the minute for us. Thank you, Denis, for making a clean break for my, my guest appearance.
Yeah. Well, he listens. So yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So question.
Well, he's prescient too, because he knew we would be recording this
exactly
however many years in the future.
I had a question for y'all, going back to the my planet is so beautiful, or my planet Arrakis is so beautiful when the sun is low line. Does this insinuate that the opening lines of Dune Part One is something that Paul saw in a prescient vision?
Wait, say that again.
So the words are a little bit off. So Chani says Arrakis is so beautiful when the sun is low, but in the beginning of Part One, we have my planet Arrakis is so beautiful when the sun is low. We know that prescient visions are not a one-to-one. You know, they don't always play out exactly
right
like Paul sees them. And we know that Paul has been dreaming about a girl in the desert in Part One, because that's, he says that to Moheim when they do the Gom Jabbar test, or right after the Gom Jabbar test. So in my head, I'm like, does this mean that the shot that we saw and the voice that we heard at the beginning of Part One, was that a prescient vision of Paul or of Paul's?
I don't know if it was a prescient vision, but it was almost certainly a dream, because the first thing we see Paul doing immediately after this scene where Chani is setting the stage in Part One is him waking up from this dream.
Hmm.
So I went back and watched the first 5 minutes of Dune Part One again, just to like run it through. And this seems like another one of his dreams of this girl in the desert.
Gotcha. Okay.
Now, whether or not those dreams are prescient visions is, you know, I think we've determined that they almost certainly are, just they're not spice induced prescient visions.
Right.
You know, I think it's safe to say that what we saw in the beginning of Part One was not only world building, but prescience, because Paul would know what the Harkonnens are doing on Arrakis. But as viewers, we need to get that baseline established as well.
Yeah. Yeah. We needed the world building for sure.
I think it's still an interesting point, though, because Chani's changed her sensibilities about Paul, as opposed to, yo, this is my planet.
Yeah.
And now she's just saying the planet, which is not like our planet. It's an in-between, you know, a possessive.
Yeah.
Your planet, our planet, my planet, the planet. Yeah, I think it's. I think it indicates her sense of change, how she's thinking about him now.
Very true. Very true. I don't know. Just an interesting thought I wanted to give out to the group. Yeah. Then minute ends as some doe eyes are shared between and smiles are shared
just,
between.
It just does.
John. Yep.
Yeah.
It just does.
David, we do a thing here on the Dune Minute podcast where at the end of each week, we give the week a Shai Hulud out of 10.
Oof.
So, not to put all the pressure on you, but we're gonna have you give a Shai Hulud rating for the week.
Well, I'd like to reserve...
we operate on halves as well. So if you're
okay,
if you're finding yourself at a 0.5 between two numbers, you know.
I think this is a solid, like, to me, a 9 or a 10 is a game changer, right? It's a thing that is fundamentally alters the landscape of stuff. And above 5, I guess, would be acceptable, right? So it's degrees of acceptability. So I would say that this is this a 7.5 or an 8? Maybe an 8.5? It's pretty high up there. It delivers on lore. It delivers on character moments. It delivers on world building. It's beautifully cinematographic, and the sound effects and everything is pretty solid. So yeah, I'm going to give it an 8. I'm going to give it an 8, which is pretty high, I would say.
Yeah, that's exactly where I was going to go with it.
that's perfect. Fair. I gave it an 8 out of 10 Shai Huluds. I think it's such an important scene. And even though it's a hard break from all the action that we had last week, it is like, this is the cultural turning point, at least with the Fedaiken, not the Fremen as a whole, but certainly with the Fedaiken. We'll see the catalyst for Paul's acceptance among all Fremen shortly. So,
yeah, and I think it wrapped up perfectly with the week too, in terms of establishing, you know, this, as you're saying, situating Paul within to the Fremen, and then starting with the next round of his adventures.
Yep, totally agree. 8 is where I was going to put it for all the same reasons. It is just it's a great, great set of minutes. I mean, typically, lore heavy minutes for me can go either direction. Sometimes it's so lore heavy that there's not a lot of action. It's just a lot of words that you're presented with in the movie. This is a little bit of both. You know, this is we do get a little bit of action with the sand riding sequence and the very first couple of seconds with the explosion, at the tail end of the explosion of this week. But the lore that we do get is, like you both said, so important. So yeah, 8 for me as well.
Nice. Hey, we are in agreement. A concord has been reached.
Well, David, it's been a pleasure having you on the Dune Minute. I hope our format wasn't too much of a, you know, wrench in your system, but it was great.
No, I think it was great. It's great to learn new disciplines and to challenge yourself in different ways. And you guys were really great about setting me up and making sure I had the clips and how you have this structured for a guest. Like, how do I do 1 minute? But you're like, no, it's a week long. And I think it all worked really well. And it does change your frame of reference. I don't know. I was thinking some sort of Yoda Zen thing, something where, yeah, it's not the whole movie, but you can go deep in a minute. And when you start to, I noticed it on the very first minute when seeing them rolling down the hill, I was like, oh my God, I don't even remember that. And then as I watched that section over and over again, I was like, oh, there's an editing thing going on here with the explosion and them hopping over the thing. And then the Fedaiken, you know, raising his arms, it's all connected. And it gave me a new insight into the depth and quality of editing. So I think the minute by minute really forces you to pay attention to detail at this next level. And it's a very cool thing. And just the fact that you guys stick to your discipline, like even that in and of itself is laudable. So,
yeah, there are some times where we'll make some exceptions. Like, we made some exceptions a couple of weeks ago, where there would be like translated Chakopsa at the end of a minute, but because we don't fully understand like the syntax of Chakopsa or anything, like we can't definitively say, well, actually the sentence stops here or anything, but like for the most part we try and stick to the as much of 60 seconds as we possibly can and not much more beyond that. So
that's a good shippy test, right? Sometimes you got to change things a little bit to meet the medium as opposed to the true meaning of it. So, well, I really appreciate your hospitality. I really appreciate everything that you've done. I, for one, am a big fan of your guys' podcast, and I can't wait for us to be able to cross our streams again in in whatever future projects await us. My prescience is failing me right now to see what's out there, but
well, we know that Dune Prophecy is getting a second season, so I'm sure we'll do another mid-season recap with you guys, and you know, another end of season recap as well. Hopefully it's not so close to the holidays, but
yes, exactly like last time. What are you guys going to do after this movie is over?
Oh man, I'm not sure.
May hit the cutting room floor, but
I don't know.
Cause if you ever wanted to do chapter by chapter book stuff, you know, I'd be into that. I've already started my outlines and notes for that project.
We've talked a little bit about our post Dune part two, because principal photography for Messiah is supposedly starting. It's May 4th when we're recording this now. Happy May the 4th to everyone.
Happy May
4th. That deserves. Yes. But principal photography supposedly is starting in June for Messiah. So my guess is that we'll probably see it either super late 2026, but more realistically, probably spring 27.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
So I think, you know, one of the things we've talked about is maybe not going minute by minute, but part by part. For the sci-fi miniseries, we've talked about doing maybe something like a mystery science theater style for the 84 Lynch film.
Yeah,
we have some ideas, but nothing's entirely, you know, set in stone yet.
You got my number, so and I've got some other ideas too. So anytime you guys want to kick the proverbial. I'm trying to think of a Dune reference for what you would kick around. If you want to throw the Hunter Seeker around or anything like that, I don't know. That's a stupid reference.
I think
call me up.
I think we had a lot of fun with the summer school series that we did.
Yeah, that was great.
You know, seasons. So maybe, you know, just to keep our podcasting and editing chops up, we might do some of that as well. I mean, who knows?
Chapter by chapter of the first Dune book.
We are not the Gom Jabbar.
Oh, did they? Is that what they do?
I haven't listened to them. They have done a book club. I think they've finished the core six at this point.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. Their podcast is spectacular. Leo and Abu are both just first of all, fantastic podcasters, but the amount of depth that they go into makes us look like, you know, fourth graders writing a book report.
Well, I have not listened to their podcast, so I'm going to add it to my, like I need something else to, you know, more media to consume. But hey, you know, your take would be your take. So not, it's just because somebody else has done it.
But yeah, I think that is it for this week of the Dune Minute, unless anyone else has anything to contribute. But as always, the Dune Minute is online in two places, really, other than podcast feeds. We are on Blue Sky at DuneMinute.com, and you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com if you'd like to get in touch. The Lorehounds are available in many places. David, one more time, if you don't mind sending us out with your socials.
Sure. You can find our website, thelorehounds.com. We've got a great blog post, by the way. We have an open submission for if anybody's interested. I've written a couple of Dune-related blog posts myself. We're covering Andor right now on the main feed and on our Star Wars feed. We just came off of Wheel of Time. We had Severance coverage as well. We've got some Doctor Who coverage running. And then, oh gosh, knows what's going to happen after we finish Andor. We're probably all going to fall on our faces. But you can search for Lorehounds on your podcast player of choice. There'll be a link in your guys' show notes for our link tree, which has all of our things, all of our affiliates. And if you like this kind of level of analysis, we have a whole group of other people that we podcast with as well. And we're on Blue Sky as well at the Lorehounds.
Not to spoil anything too early, but other members of the Lorehounds will be joining us for later minutes of the movie. So
I can't wait to hear when that rolls out. I don't even know what minutes got picked, so I'm excited to hear. Don't tell me though, because I'm be surprised.
All right, cool.
Well, that will do it, David. Again, thank you so much, and we will see y'all back on Monday for some more episodes of the Dune Minute podcast. See you around.
See ya.